Hey, this is Tim Woods, Professional Dungeon Master, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun. Yeah, I mean, your shenanigans are cruel and tragic. Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Even shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Right. Hello, everybody. Hello again, and welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. Michael Berlew, how is life down in Georgia?
Yeah, that's good enough.
That's the answer we get. That's the well thought out.
That's like a paragraph in Georgia. There was like five H's at the end of that. So
has it become steamy in Georgia yet?
No, we've been getting some rain down here the last few days. It got actually kind of calmed down from the mid-90s last week. So we're back to spring form, but I know summer's just waiting there ready to punch us in the face. So
just like the rest of us are waiting to punch you in the face. But, you know.
Yeah, but, hey, I'm the president of the punching club, so bring it on.
Punch. See, it's the punching team, Berlew. You already forgot the name of it.
Oh, I'm the president of it. I can name it wherever the hell I want. So there.
It's my club. I can name it whatever I want. But anyway. Mm-hmm. And welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. If you are just tuning in, this is episode 248, something like that. Close to 250. We've been podcasting probably for about 5 years now. And basically the show essentially is... we bring on a lot of interesting guests, and we kind of play some stupid games, talk about life, kind of ramp it all. I guess we're somewhat of a variety show.
I would say that's the best thing. I mean, I don't think we go to a specific niche, if you will. I mean,
hence our numbers.
It's boring to do the same thing week in and week out. You gotta be surprised when you come onto a podcast, you know?
Well, I gotta be honest. I have a lot of interest, but I don't think I could talk about my interest every week. Like, I don't think I could do a, let's say, Liverpool podcast. Like, I don't think I could do it every week. I don't think I could do a craft beer podcast every single week. So, on here, we get to talk about all of it. So, welcome. Welcome to the show, everybody.
The show that's all about Liverpool and crap beer, and that's it.
Not a bad podcast. That's not a bad. I would listen to it.
I have nothing about Liverpool, so, you know, finish up the next hour and a half, buddy.
Well, I guess I could start there just real quick. First championship, Liverpool won the Champions League, for those of you who love soccer, which is pretty much a gigantic deal. Really no tournament... I can really compare it to in sports where, if you don't know much about Champions League, it's basically the top three or four teams from all the European leagues face off in a tournament throughout that whole year of the next season. So really Liverpool is playing two seasons at once. Okay. So they're playing their normal Premier League season, and then every couple of weeks they'd have a Champions League game. So it's a really fascinating thing. You can't really compare it in sports. Nothing I can really think of.
I'm trying to think. They used to have IROC racing where, like, the champions from all series of NASCAR and IndyCar and the World of Outlaws used to do, like, four races a year. That's about as close as I can recall of anything of that sort.
Yeah, I think the reason why, because it's just so global and there are just so many high-quality leagues, so it is possible, like... You couldn't do it with baseball, really. Like, you know, maybe baseball might be the next sport you could do, but obviously football would never work. Basketball would never work.
I think it could work with basketball.
Hockey.
Basketball, hockey. I mean, those are global sports as long as everybody has some time off. Now, granted, considering how much money you can make in the NBA and the NHL, well, with the NBA, at least, I don't think they're going to take it that seriously.
Right.
I mean, maybe the NHL, because some guys do go over to Europe and Russia to get more money over there. So who knows?
Yeah. So for non-soccer fans, the Premier League is
so basically 95% of you out there,
pretty much. So basically, what the Premier the Liverpool plays in the Premier League, which is the English league, and they had one of the sickest seasons ever in the Premier League, one of the highest point totals ever, and they finished second place. They lost one game the entire year and finished second place. So to get to the Champions League final and lose would have been doubly devastating, to lose both the league and the Champions League. And they pulled off some amazing feats. Like they lost to Barcelona 3-0. So the second game, that meant they had to beat them 4-0 in order to advance. So if they had beat them 3-1, they wouldn't have advanced. They had to beat Barcelona, who's a world-class team, 4-0, which with missing a lot of players, to get to the final. So really, really amazing feat and amazing really amazing season by Liverpool. I got together on Saturday with a buddy of mine. We had like a big beer tasting, and we definitely got pretty loaded by the end, because it was quite a feat to watch them win. So it's the first championship I've had with a team probably since the Giants, I would guess, was the last time one of my teams won something. So very, very, very exciting.
So let's see, there's a 5-6 hour difference. So you were getting wasted around 8 a.m. this past weekend?
Game was at 3 o'clock. So we're getting wasted around 1 o'clock.
Because I was about to say 8 a.m. is about 2 hours too late for you.
Yeah, well, the worst was that I had to go to this cocktail party in my neighborhood at night that we had bought tickets for. So it was basically going from drinking a bunch of beer during the Liverpool game and then having two people come over before the cocktail party, having a couple beers with them, and then going to the cocktail party, which was just, from what I remember, it was a good time.
Now, what does a Denville cocktail party entail, Scott?
Good question, because this is going to segue into kind of what I want to talk about. On a side note, NASCAR, damn Joe Rogan beat us to sponsorship on the car, to be the podcast on the car. We almost had it.
Well, I'm going to caveat this because I did some research on this.
Okay.
I can't confirm if the guy got money for it. He might have done it out just like he's a Joe Rogan fan out of kindness. But he doesn't race in the top three premier. He races in what's called the NASCAR West Series. And I would probably say that's the equivalent to probably like single A ball, something like that. Okay. Like, you're getting your feet into NASCAR competition, but you're not in NASCAR competition, for lack of a better term. So,
what you're saying is Joe Rogan's not really in our like ballpark yet.
No, right. We were trying to get on an actual cup card, the Premier League of racing in America.
Let's recap that story real quick. Let's recap that story. So there was the driver here. You give the background, but there was like a month or two where we had a good amount of sponsors, and we made a couple bucks. Like, it just went all into t-shirts and just paying for this podcast and buying a new recording device. But I decided we should try to basically get our if there was a way to get our logo on a NASCAR. And the opportunity seemed like it was possible. So give the background of that car real quick.
Yeah, so our plan was we did an interview that never went on air.
Nope.
From VeedWorks,
yep.
who was sponsoring Carl Long's car in the NASCAR Cup Series. Basically, the story was he got a deal with this place. It was a marijuana, I don't know if it was like edibles or if it was like...
I think it was like multiple products, just like all sorts of different... Yeah.
Yeah, they work out of Colorado. It's legal marijuana. But in any case, basically the story was they had a deal with this guy to be on their car, and it was a big deal for them. Carl Long put in the paperwork to NASCAR. Apparently, he spelt it wrong, where they didn't initially thought, oh, this is a pot company, and they approved it. And basically, he showed up to a race, and they looked at his car and like, what the hell is this?
Right.
And they had to force him to ripped the sponsorship off of there. So we were trying to get in really hot. Like, I got in contact with a guy the week after it happened to, like, this, like, breaking news, and it just, the needless to say, the interview was horrible. I mean, I'm not going to say all of our interviews are 100% winners, but this one was like, all right, there is zero possibility you're going to be able to listen to this entire conversation and say that was very enjoyable. But off of that, jokingly, me and Scott were going back and forth, and he's like, well, how much would it cost to, like, just pay for a tire or something like that, where we can get, like, the smallest sticker humanly possible on this car just so we can go around and say, hey, we were a NASCAR sponsor. And I was able to get on with them through Facebook, and they said the cheapest plan of anything is $2,500.
Right.
Like, we were hoping to pay, like, $50 for us, or even a couple $100 for a single tire.
We were willing, if I remember correctly, we were willing to go to about $300. I thought for the story, it would have been worth it. And I was thinking, hey, this guy's asking people for tires. Now, what did the full set of tires cost?
I think they cost around $400, $500 a single one, so about close to $2,000.
Okay.
Per set.
So we could have went, maybe we could have went halfsies with another podcast. But the point was, we were clearly just asking. We were saying, could we buy you a tire? And this guy, I'm sure, doesn't have sponsors knocking down the door to get on his car, obviously. So we thought it was a feasible idea, but apparently they would only accept what if we bought him four tires, right?
A little bit more than that. Yeah, I guess that's the price he was looking for. Yeah. So, yeah, there was a little bit out of our range. But to kind of go back to the Joe Rogan thing, it was a very minor series. And there were 16 cars that showed up for this event in Colorado. And apparently he finished 15th out of 16.
So he
wasn't really knocking down the doors.
Well, if he was a Rogan listener, he might have been pretty high or on mushrooms or something that. So 15, just finishing the race under that condition is an accomplishment.
And he could very well be a listener because, as Apple Podcasts once told us, we are exactly like the Joe Rogan podcast.
Maybe we should try to get the guy who drove the car.
I'd be down.
We could talk to him. But yeah, he had I saw on Instagram, he had the big Joe Rogan Experience thing on the hood. It's pretty badass. I'm not going to lie. I was picturing, like, a Verbal Shenanigans logo on a car that huge. It would be pretty sweet. But
I was hoping for our Twitter cover picture where it's you and me giving a thumbs up with the Dukes of Hazzard car going over our head.
Long term, I'd like to set that picture up like a real photo to be taken like that. You know, they call John Schneider back up and get the other Duke boy, whatever, I forget his name, and, you know, us sitting there and actually have the car jump over us. That's, you know, that's episode 300, guys. That's what you have to look forward to down the line.
Or at the very least, you're aiming for me to just sit there as some guy who has no experience try to jump a car and land into me.
Be like, yeah, it's the Duke boys, Berlo. It's the Duke boys. Some guys I paid out of.
I don't remember David Duke being on the show, Scott.
And what? Why is that Duke guy a large black man?
Are you sure that was the pilot episode? Because I don't remember that.
Just sit tight. Long roundabout story, I guess. So the cocktail party. Basically, I live in a little lake community. And in this little lake community, there are a ton of, like, little events that go on. It's cool. It's a really cool way to kind of get to know the people you live with, which a lot of communities, let's face it, you know, maybe your neighbor on the left, your neighbor on the right, maybe the guy across the street, and, you know, that's kind of it. So this has, like, an old school community vibe. There's a little clubhouse with, like, $2 drinks some nights. There's a lake that you can go to, a beach, blah, 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 blah. And they do this cocktail party and whatnot. So basically, I kind of live in – I've never watched the Gilmore Girls, but Alex is a big Gilmore Girls fan, and she says we live in Stars Hollow, which someone else has said that too, which I guess is kind of like this little community. I don't know. We have, like, Christmas tree sales and all these little events in the community, which is – I find pretty cool. I don't know. Like, do you know a lot of your neighbors down there?
We say hi from time to time. We don't really hang out. There's like a Facebook page for the area, but
yeah,
that's when you get more of the gripes than come on over neighbors kind of deals.
Yeah, like can the Burlews please put on pants? Like those kind of complaints, right?
No, they generally get like one neighbor cried about, hey, since we don't have an HOA, do we want to all set up where we mow like a part of the lawn that's, you know, it's like communal property. Nobody's supposed to mow it. It's not anybody's land. And then like, I think it was like 3 days later, the person just started crying and all you people suck. I see that on Facebook, 90 people saw this post and only 2 people volunteered. You all suck. So
it's kind of like people who post jokes and don't understand why they're not funny.
I think I know a couple of them people, Scott.
So let me segue to where I wanted to go here. Now, so I went to the cocktail party. Basically, the clubhouse is kind of like, it's called the clubhouse, right? Now, you're thinking maybe like, oh, it's a nice clubhouse. By the way, no. The clubhouse is kind of like, it kind of looks like a VFW hall, basically.
Okay. How old is the carpet in the place?
No carpet. Wood floors. Wood floors.
How danky are those wood floors?
They're okay. You know what it is? The inside's not that bad. The outside's like kind of dilapidated a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Inside's fine. There's like a stage. Sometimes they'll have a band play. They've actually done comedy shows there, which I have no interest in performing on, by the way. I feel like this is my community. They don't need to know. I'm one of those comics who does not like – I don't know. Like for people like through work or neighbor, like I don't mention it ever. Like I still don't even consider sometimes calling myself a comic is weird. I don't know. I'm just weird like that, I guess. I mean,
I guess until it's your full-time living, you don't want to say it.
Right. And I don't love self-promotion that much. Like even, you know, I'll try to post show flyers and it's usually one time. I don't like hounding people like, come on out. Because you know what? I bug people to come on out. That's the time that I bomb and they never come back again. So I like it to be like a little bit more organic. Yeah. Like, hey, we're coming. Oh, cool. You know, like, and it has happened. Like even at Tap House like 2 months ago, my landlord came out and it was a weird – I'm not blaming the crowd completely, but it was a weird, weird crowd. There was a lot of tables missing and a lot of older crowd. And it was really hard work hosting. It was like pulling teeth, man. So they definitely didn't see the best side of me, which is not great to begin with. So anyway, I wanted to real quick before we get to our guest. So for years, we've now been here for 3 years, and we are purchasing a home in the next couple weeks. God willing, everything goes all right with home inspection and whatnot. We're getting through that step, which is just a whole other nerve-wracking issue in itself. But for years, I've been playing on the volleyball team in my community, which just shows you it is like this weird little community. There's a volleyball team. We play the other lakes that are in the area.
Is there a big rivalry?
There is.
Is it like this Liverpool-Barcelona thing you told me about earlier?
It's close.
Are there the Denville Volleyball Championships on the line?
The old Indian Lake versus Essling Lake war has been raging on for years. I got a couple funny stories.
That other team when you were part of the lake patrol that one time?
different lake. So I was on the volleyball team at the other lake where I used to live, where we used to do the podcast from. But So for years now, this guy I play with, this guy Walter, has been asking me, hey, come on down and join the men's club. I'm like, okay, the men's club. And I'm like, listen, I don't want to join this men's club. Okay, so essentially the understanding I got is, hey, we do like some things around the community, help fix stuff up, and we drink a lot of beer. I'm like, okay. But I don't want to become part of the men's club unless I know I'm going to be there long term. Now that I'm buying a house, I'm going to, knock on wood, I'm going to be here long term. So I decided to go to the men's club meeting on Monday. Okay, now, I know this is 2019. Maybe men's club isn't allowed anymore, but...
Is there a hazing process joining
the men's club? I didn't know.
Did you have to get your belly shaved or something like that?
So, they have...
Rookie.
They have men's club. It was a barbecue for new members, and then the meeting to follow. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll go down, grab a couple dogs, you know, eat, and then, you know, if I don't, I kept saying to myself, if I don't like it, I, you know, it's okay. It's okay. And I just won't do it. So I go eat, and you know what's the hardest thing is, like, I felt this way in comedy. I felt this way in high school. I felt this way in college. It's always that initial meeting people, like, you know, people naturally congregate in circles, you know, like when you talk, it's in a circle. And it's like, how do you enter the circle? Do you, like, I'm standing there, like, looking at the lake, kind of eating a hot dog in the distance, but they'll kind of see me and be like, hey, like, what are you doing? So I'm already feeling like I'm kind of like hovering over my one friend that I know a little bit, like trying to like. You can't see me, like, listeners can't see me, but, like, kind of fidget my way into the circle a little bit. Because you don't want to be, like, awkward and blow the circle up and just be, like, you know, stick your head in the middle of the circle. Because that's weird, too.
Are you bumping your friend out of the way? I need to socialize. Give me room.
It felt like that awkward high school-y meeting new people thing that is never fun. You know. So eventually I'm just talking to guys about different things, and I noticed one of the guys there is a comic that I know.
Oh.
And he does a little he runs a show at the lake here, and he did a couple other things. His name is Mike. I'm like, oh, hey, okay, there's my in. You know, there's my in. Oh, okay. I could talk to him. I don't have to be the weird guy clinging to my friend Walter, who knows everybody. I could kind of weasel my way in. So we get in, and everything's fine. Have a couple dogs. And now it's time for the meeting, okay?
Okay.
And right away, I'm a little nervous. And again, there's no reason for me to be nervous, but this is just, it's either a human thing or it's just a Scott Brennan thing. I don't know. A little social anxiety, which I don't have after the first time I meet you, but I don't know. Maybe it's that first initial, like, hey, hello, how are you?
And it's a little awkwardness knowing that, all right, I'm going to be living here for a while, so if I start weird, it's going to be hard to get out of this moment.
Right, and maybe I should put on pants. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe you shouldn't have shoved your friend and said, get out of my way, that's a comedy friend over there. I'm going to eat hot dogs by hand.
Maybe.
Munch.
Maybe the Speedo and the gold chain was a weird outfit. I don't know. I just thought it was like a frat party, so...
You said, you know what? I'm trying out a new look. These people got to get used to it.
This is me. I'm coming to your lake, baby. I'm coming.
Be prepared. Bread and butter is just laying it out.
Mm-hmm. 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 Mm-hmm.
Extra creamy.
Ew. So, men's club meeting starts, and we're on the bleacher. We decided to do it outside. And there's like little bleachers, kind of. And we're all sitting there. President goes up, and so essentially he starts rattling off a list of like here's the budget, here's what we have in the budget, here's what we spent it on. And it's so innocent, and it's like it just throws me back to like Boy Scouts kind of. And they're like, we spent $56 on sand to put in the walkway, we wrote a check for $100 for the clams from the from the whatever dance, and then and then, but before that, it was, of course, like, everybody grab your beers. Make sure you get your beers, because they had a keg, of course. They just have to have a keg. You grab your beers, make sure you drink your beers, blah, blah, blah. So I noticed a common thread forming here. And then he's like, okay, guys, we need a volunteer for fun weekend to work the beer tent. Okay? Now, I don't know why he has a southern accent, but it seemed like it was coming through that way.
Just fits him.
Yeah, it just fit the president of the men's club.
Yeah. The guy was from Japan, but, you know, just work with us, people.
So, he's like, okay, look, fun weekend is a good time. you know, we need people to pour beer at the beer tent. It's the best job because you're in the shade and you're right by the beer taps. And everyone's like, yeah, all right, I'm on, you know. So, and they're like, this year we got new way to pay for the beer and the clams. We got separate coins from from the clam coins, and now you can tell the difference, and blah, 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 blah.
All right, this guy's a little too obsessed with clams. Like, first off, like when you said $100 for clams for a dance, that made me kind of scratch my head there. I've never been to some kind of social event where there was so much put into the clams.
Well, Indian Lake cares about their clams, Mike. It's on their motto, you know.
A clam a day keeps the community to stay.
Right. It's beautiful. Poetic.
Oh, yeah. When are you going to get your tattoo of your clam?
My clam tattoo?
Yeah.
So, and then they're like, okay, look, last year there was reports of people playing beer pong out in the parking lot, which we're okay with, but apparently some underage kids got served. And we got to protect our beer, our liquor license, because you guys, if we lose this liquor license, we lose the lake. And everyone's like, oh, yeah.
Sounds like an 80s movie.
Yep.
Right
now. Yep. That's
now the other lake's volleyball team comes over and they have this elaborate scheme where they have somebody who looks like a 15-year-old that drinks beer, and you lose your license, and you have to play them in the big volleyball game.
No. They look like they're like 30, but they're really like 15, and they're like, I got drunk, you know, like
I'm the mayor of Danville, and I am shocked by this lake. No more shenanigans from this lake.
So, of course, this podcast has ruined my life, where while this is all going on, the only thing I'm thinking of, I can't wait to talk about this on the show. And then they're just like, all right, we need volunteers for, we're going to be putting in the patio, the brick patio, and repainting the gazebo. We'll have a keg. We'll have a keg present, but, you know, we do need volunteers. So everything they presented was like, you got to do this, but We'll have beer. And then they're like, listen, they have these things called Fun Fridays, where on Friday you go to the beach and there's drinks for like $2 or whatever. And they're like, listen, there's a Fun Friday scheduled before Fun Weekend. And the problem is we don't want all the men's club members coming in and drinking all the beer for Fun Weekend. So we need to cancel Fun Friday. And they're like, oh, we definitely got to cancel Fun Friday. You know, like,
the mayor comes over, men's club! Shaking his fist as all the kegs are empty.
But it's so funny. They're like, yeah, we need volunteers to host a fishing tournament. Gene over here has been hosting it for 72 years. Say hi, Gene. Hi, you know. Gene's got to take off this year. Someone else needs to step up to weigh the fish. It's 2 hours, boys. We just got to do it. It's good for the community and the children. Everyone's like, yeah, it's good. Like, one guy will step up. Be like, I'll volunteer. Like, it's just a whole scene out of like a, I don't even know if it's a movie. It just reminds me of like old towny kind of stuff, like stuff you would see at the bingo hall or the church or the things like that. But overall, it was kind of cool. Met a couple guys who were also new, and I was laughing, and we were laughing at it. And Scott Brennan, podcaster, crappy comic, and now member of the men's club.
Member of the men's. We need a theme song for them. That's something we need to work on.
Member of the men's.
We'll fix your community while drinking your beer.
And then they're like, we got
$10,000 on clams every single year. Like, we're the men's club. Men's club.
They're like, We got Rolling Rock and Land Shark this year because we got a mega discount on it. So, you know, you're in the sun, you want to drink something light. Like, every good thing they said was always backed up by, like, well, you're going to be drinking beer, so it'll be okay.
All right, now I'm seeing in my 80s movie, like, the head of the men's club is, like, talking to, like, the president of Land Shark, making this crazy deal. Right. Going, no. Land Shark is the perfect beer for the men's club. Then he has his secondhand man over in Rolling Rock. Seriously, Men's Club does nothing but drink Rolling Rock. And it's just endless. Just.
But here's the thing. Like, I feel like Men's Club and this little community, I feel like Georgia would really like a Men's Club. Like, I feel like we'd fit right in down there.
They do. It's called the Klan.
Different kind of club. Dudes got a little high.
Yeah. I saw one of their videos. I have a few questions about your Men's Club as that occurs.
How was the first meeting, though, Burlow, at your Men's Club?
It was kind of awkward, you know. I mean, everybody looks familiar to me. They all look the same, but mm-hmm. I tried to find a common subject, and everything they brought up wasn't really hitting my marks, if you will. So,
well, speaking of the ultimate Men's Club, we should probably segue into our guest.
That is one of the worst segues in the history of mankind.
First off, has there ever been really a great segue? Do we ever have an amazing segue? Are there ever times where you go home at night and you're like, God, Scott?
There have been times I've gone upstairs and Izzy's like, well, how's the show? I'm like, I mean, I didn't really feel it, but my segue, man, the game was tight.
You'll be like, the show sucked, but Scott's segue tonight. Where did he come up with this? Where did he get the material from? How did he do it?
I mean, I was talking about wrestling and all of a sudden, oh, by the way, here's Sharon Alexander.
Right.
Bam.
Right.
I'm like, damn, that was good. Ugh.
All right. Well,
I feel I don't really bring comedy. I just bring mediocre segues. But luckily, it's a biweekly thing, so go ahead with your segue, Scott.
we're biweekly segues, so now we're like, Mike, you get the segue 2 weeks from now. Be prepared.
I get the 2 and the 4, you get the 1 and the 3, and then we flip a coin if it's a 5 in the week, okay?
Gotcha. Well, anyway, Mike, you know, like that's what I said, the ultimate men's club might happen to be Dungeons & Dragons, the original Virgin Men's Club. So who we got on the show today?
We got Tim Woods joining us, Scott. He is a professional D&D dungeon master. And we're going to be talking to him about how an RPG game became a career for him, if you will.
All right. So when you got T. Woods, you got me really excited. I thought, you know, we had we were getting Tiger on the line.
Well, he asked if his brother could join. I'm like, no, I want to talk to you. I want to scoop on you.
Right.
Golf is a boring game.
So you turned down his brother, Tiger.
Well, yeah. I mean, his game has, like, tigers in it, I assume. So I'm like, no, I just need one person who plays the game.
Gotcha. All right. Well, we'll focus on him, and maybe we'll bring Tiger on next week if we have time.
Nah. But I don't see one thing we could talk about.
All right. Let's get Tim on the line.
Hello?
Hey, is this Tim?
Hi, yes, this is Tim. Is this Michael?
This is Scott. I'm going to merge Mike in right now. Hold on.
Excellent.
All right. Tim, you should be able to hear Michael. Michael, you should be able to hear Tim.
Awesome.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, how's it going, Michael?
Doing well. Yourself, sir?
Excellent. Doing fantastic. Thanks so much for coming online with me.
Hey, our pleasure. Excellent. I mean, this one took a bit because you've been getting busy as of late.
Absolutely. I am so sorry about the scheduling issues. It was just a matter of I didn't expect my Mondays to fill up so quickly, as it were. So thank you so much for bearing with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Tim, I saw on our calendar, because we have a calendar where we have guests, and I saw T. Woods in this slot. I was like, oh, my God. We're gonna talk to Tiger, but, you know.
He's going to be here. Yeah. We still have the running joke in my family that Uncle Tiger's going to show up at one family reunion one of these days.
It'd be really funny if Tiger happened to be really into Dungeons & Dragons, too, and you guys kind of.
It's been his lifelong dream to hop into a game, I bet.
So I can talk about the 18 hole. All I can tell you, all in my mind was I rolled a 12, and I knew it was game over, so I didn't even care anymore. I'm the master of nothing. So, Tim, I mean, I guess we got to start right at the beginning. Being a professional Dungeons & Dragons master. I'm guessing when you were younger playing this game, you didn't think to yourself, all right, I'm going to be full-time doing this for my living, I'm guessing.
No, not even a little bit. I actually think, like, would I have want, like, I think, like, oh, if I could go back in time and tell my younger self, I'll bet he would have been, you know, a lot more easygoing and a lot, like, more excited about the future. But the truth is, if I had known that going in, I think I would have exploded or just been overwhelmed and not been able to do anything. I think just if you had told me as a child learning about this game and being so passionate and so excited about it that this would be my job, I don't know if I could have handled that information at that particular juncture.
Yeah. I just imagine third grade you be like, yes, I don't have to learn math. And then
exactly.
Like years later, what does this dice count up to?
I would have been flipping off every one of my teachers. Anytime anyone told me to, like, straighten my tie or something, I would have been like, I'm never going to wear a tie. Like, I would have been a pain in the ass feeling so confident that I didn't need anybody or anything if I knew my future was going to be about the pretty much one topic that I felt confident about from age 10 onward.
So what would you say introduced you? Was it directly Dungeons & Dragons itself, or just were you just into gaming as a young kid?
I mean, I was definitely into gaming as a kid. Me and my brother and my sisters, we were always playing games all the time. But it was definitely a particular moment when I was a kid where I, like, found this weird, like, solo, like, you can play this little adventure by yourself if you don't have anybody else to play D&D with. This gives you a little sample. And I remember reading it and being like, okay, all right, this kind of makes sense. Wait a minute. Oh, you can be anybody in this thing. Oh, wait, you can do anything. Oh, my God. And it's that moment where it's like you're looking at the Legos set and you're like, I can build anything here. That kind of transformative moment. After that, there was no going back. I was obsessed at that point.
Now Tim, how old are you?
I am a 32 now. I started playing D&D. I discovered it when I was 10, started probably really playing it when I was around 12. So going on 2 decades as of very recently.
Right. So, I mean, so we're very close in age. Now, what I remember as a kid hearing of Dungeons & Dragons and like kind of, you know, kind of hearing guys play it in the 80s and whatnot, were you, like, was it at all popular when you were a kid, or were you kind of the kid who found something that was kind of old and was like, wow, I'm going to learn how to play this now, and had to find other people who played it?
It's interesting because D&D has kind of gone up and down. It's been right. Very, very mainstream and popular, and then it's kind of disappeared a little bit and then come back at different points. And I can say for me, even if it was, and it was a pretty popular, I think, when I first discovered it, I was the kind of person who, I wasn't really going to comic book shops. I wasn't really going to gaming shops. Even games like Magic the Gathering that were very popular when I was a kid, I kind of thought of those as games that me and my brother would play. But if you told me other people play Magic, let alone that these were very popular games that were being played all across the nation, I was like, nah, it's probably just me and my brother, honestly. We're the two people who play these games, and that's all I knew. So it was kind of like I grew up feeling like it was just my thing and that I was kind of alone with this game and that no one understood it. And the more I discovered people who played it, the more excited I got. But I never lost that sensation of D&D's hard to find. Like, you can't really, to me, it was never as easy as just picking up a group. I was always the one kind of, hey, everybody want to maybe listen to me run D&D for everybody? And everyone's like, no.
Get away from me, like, wizard.
We want to hang out and, like, watch a movie. We want to be normal people. And I'm like, no, if you listen to me the most during this game, it'll be a lot more fun than us just hanging out like normal people. And it's a very hard sell, I think, for most people.
Now, let me. Do you, as you play this, like I've never played the game itself. Like, do you, like, get good at the game? Like, is there a way? Like, is it the more you play, you get better, or is, like, every time something completely like, if we were to sit down with you right now, would we be on an equal playing field, or would you just be, like, dominating us?
It's really interesting because I think there's different schools of thought. I personally believe No, it does not matter how long you play D&D. You might be better at playing the rules and playing the numbers, mm-hmm. but ultimately D&D is weird because you win or you lose. It's all about the story that you tell. And I've seen people who, as soon as they start the game, just start attacking each other. And in my head, I'm like, it's not good strategy, guys. We're going to lose. There's no winning or losing in this game, but you're going to lose if you just keep attacking each other. But they have the most fun of anybody. And then when I look at that, I say, all right, well, if the game is to defeat the dragon in our imagination, then I guess we didn't do that specific thing. But if the goal was to have fun, I can't argue with it. Lots of people can show up on their first day and quote unquote win D&D by telling some of the best stories I've ever seen in D&D definitely come from people who are playing for the first time. Without a doubt, that is true.
So the normal rookie strategy is the Leroy Jenkins.
Absolutely, yes, yeah. And, like, you can do it, and good or bad results, the Leroy Jenkins will tell a good story, without a doubt. Most of the best stories in the game, I remember running a game for two kids. One kid was just the cleric very carefully going through each room, and he had the paladin with him, and he's like, you just got to have my back, man. Just have my back. And the paladin just kept nodding. Sure, sure. Then they met the king of the dungeon, and the paladin just went literally, Leroy Jenkins, and charged him while the cleric was trying to negotiate. The cleric was not happy, but damn if it wasn't one of the funniest moments that I've ever seen. And as a teacher, it was very hard for me not to just burst out laughing and point at the cleric and be like, you just got owned. I'm sorry, but that's hilarious. But it becomes a little bit of a negotiating game after that.
So when you're in a game with like this open world, what mm-hmm. is there any kind of like strategy, or is there like ways you can tinker with the rule? I'm trying to get a grasp of like when you're doing this game, is mm-hmm. there a set end, or is it just, hey, let's go on another adventure?
I mean, there's definitely a script that I'm following. When I run adventures, I'm kind of looking at a book or maybe a script that I've written, and it's kind of telling me that adventure will tell me, okay, if they go left, then this happens, and if they go right, this happens, and if they do something else, here are some other ideas on what can happen. And in that sense, that and then the rules of the game kind of let me advise people where I'm like, well, here's the thing, you're an archer. You probably want to be shooting from far away. That's the best strategy for you to do right now. Also, everybody, there's footprints. Don't forget those bloody footprints. That's probably a clue, and I'll be throwing ideas out there and stuff. But the truth is, one of the best things about D&D is the players will almost every session, at least once a session, say something where they go, wait, what about this? And I go, oh, well, shit, I didn't think of that. Yeah, if you go there, then I guess you've bypassed the whole mystery and you've solved this whole thing. And those are the greatest moments of D&D, when it's like you did something that the book didn't think of and that I didn't think of. And some dungeon masters are like, oh, never let them see you sweat. I always let them see me sweat. I'm like, you just stumped me, and I need a minute. Give me 1 second, because you just did such a clever idea and it's so original that even the adventure designers didn't think of it. So here's the thing. It's working out great for you, because whenever I have to improvise stuff, obviously it's going to work out a little bit better in their favor. I haven't had as much time to plan scheme against them, whereas they've come up with a really good idea on the spot. It's always going to be a good one.
Now, when I was about 10 years old, I entered a POG tournament. POGs were the biggest thing going,
yes.
Right?
Oh, yeah. I remember POGs.
Now, I went and played this POG tournament. I, like, won second place in this POG tournament. And
nice.
And I thought, this was it for me. I'm going to be called up to the POG big leagues. And
you will ascend among the famous POG athletes of our time.
That's
yes.
it. For generations, I was going to be on the podium of POGdom, holding up like
ESPN would have a special on right. Scott Brennan, the
right.
POG
years.
The,
30
be
for
on
30.
Yeah.
But my point was, I had thought that was going to be something, and it kind of went away, and I guarantee it'll come back somewhere in some mm-hmm. form or whatnot, but
without a doubt, I think so. I agree with that. Someone will like bring back POGs within our lifetime,
100%. And so my point was, it went away. I never ended up making mm-hmm. money or career out of my amazing POG skills. But you, okay, so you now are still obviously very passionate about the game. When when in your life did something click and turn over from going from a player, who just loves the game, to, hey, I can make – you know, I don't know if you're making a full living or whatnot, but I can make some money. I can make this a venture where people might be interested in my services. When did that shift happen?
It's interesting. I really knew for a long time that I wanted to like be involved with these games, and that they were something that I was very excited and passionate about. But learning how could I make this into a job? How could I maybe be one of the people perhaps designing games, perhaps making some games of my own or something? That was always something that had stumped me. And I ended up working at a comic book shop, Forbidden Planet, near Union Square. And I was kind of like one of the RPG people there. I didn't know nearly enough about comics to really be working there, but when people came in asking about D&D, I knew how to handle those sales without it, and I could love talking to people about it. But it was so weird because I was leveraging it to maybe work at one of the companies designing these games, but every day I would meet somebody without fail who would say to me, oh, D&D, I always wanted to play that, but I don't have a friend who can teach me, so I guess I never will. Anyway, bye. And that was driving me crazy. It was driving me insane, the idea that so many people want to play this game, but in reality, it's still a niche thing to some degree, because ultimately, all of these people who are huge nerds, who love comics, who love anime, who love all of this nerdy stuff, and want to play D&D, feel like they can because they don't have a friend to teach them. And there's rule books and there's beginner boxes, but if you don't have a friend to teach you D&D, D&D is not that easy to just pick up. If there's nobody in the room who's played before, eight people can sit around a table and not make any progress, really, trying to figure out what do we do here? How does this game even work? How do we wrap our heads around it? It's not even like a board game where you can just sit down and read some instructions and start picking it up in 10 minutes. So I started printing out business cards. I started handing them out to people. And before I knew it, some parents started like asking me to come over and run birthday parties for their kids. College students who were bringing me in to have them like teach them D&D for one session. And then one of them would be like promoted to Dungeon Master in my wake, kind of. And I just started running different like events for different companies. One thing led to another, word of mouth got around, and it just kind of became this grassroots thing that spread around. People enjoyed my games and started like bringing me from their workplaces to their families, from their families to like other groups of friends, and it just kind of spread from there. So definitely not the conventional way that I think a lot of people get into making their hobby into their job, but it was something that I saw a demand for, I guess.
Right.
Now, when you're starting your business, what do you have to make, like, different games for different scenarios? Because I'm guessing, like, if you're doing a little child's birthday party, the mom doesn't want to hear you say, okay, now to go slit the dragon's throat.
Absolutely. It's just everyone's dead. What have you all done? Yeah, absolutely. I'll admit, especially when it comes parties, I have several different like canned adventures that like my go-to is kind of the one where it's like you arrive in a town. Is there a dragon here? Uh-oh, what's going on? Dragons are pretty tough. Are we sure we want to fight a dragon? Maybe we should talk to this dragon. And it's a very like easy to run in 3 hours scenario that goes from zero. I say it goes from zero to dragon in 60 seconds. It is the D&D adventure that is has the most epic stuff in the shortest amount of time. And the adventure is actually Horde of the Dragon Queen. It's a published adventure. And I've used that as kind of the model of what I do for kids' birthday parties because I have so much experience running that particular 3-hour story, as it were. I run a lot of different adventures. Some of them are my own design. Some of them are ones that I've pulled out of official adventures. Ironically, most clients who reach out to me have an adventure in mind. They say, could you run the new giant themed adventure that Wizards of the Coast just released? We've been hearing good stuff about that one. We really want someone to run that one. And they'll call me in to run something specific. So sometimes it's people with something very specific in mind, as opposed to them asking me to come in and just run whatever I'm thinking of at the moment. So I've learned certain scripts for certain situations that fit maybe certain situations better than others.
Nice. You know, like 10 years ago, if you would have told me, you know, you were making money doing this, I would, you know, I would laugh and be like, there's no way. But I
definitely would have laughed too.
Right. But through, you know, like nowadays I think of through, you know, you've got every Comic-Con that are gigantic every weekend. You've got, you know, social media groups where you could find anyone with similar interest to you. It's popped up in pop culture, like Stranger Things and all these other things and whatnot. So my question is, like, I guess nowadays there has to be a lot of outlets for people to find you and also find other players. I'm sure like social media has kind of changed everything.
When I first started doing this on my own, I was using Meetup a lot to kind of bring groups together. I don't do that as much just because now I find people prefer to play with people that they kind of already know, and like pre-set up groups of friends, just they mesh so well together, because even if they have never played D&D before, they're like on good terms with each other and stuff. So I've definitely used Meetup. I've definitely used social media. I think that social media has changed not just the opportunity that people have in D&D like me, but D&D itself is fundamentally different when, in particular, you can go on YouTube and watch people play D&D now. That has changed the game big time, because when I was in college, I remember we used to meet up to play D&D, but we had a code word. We would tell people, all right, we're going to go play basketball now, because that was the one thing that we all knew. We would never actually be going to play basketball. That was the one thing that we knew it would always mean D&D. And then some of our friends and some of the girls in our group found out the code word. They thought it was hilarious. But then some of the girls were like, we want to come up and watch you guys play D&D. And I said, much to my chagrin, no. I was like, that's too you. And I said, don't worry, I'm doing you guys a favor. You won't like it. And they were kind of like, don't tell us what we would or wouldn't like. We want to come watch. And if it's not a problem. And everybody else was like, let them watch. And I was like, oh, okay, but you're going to be bored. And they had a blast. They had so much fun watching the game. And they turned to each other and they said, oh, it's this. You're just sitting around and playing a game and having fun and eating pizza and drinking beer. Would do this. Of course we would do this. Why wouldn't we? This looks like such a blast. And my world was rocked to its core. I was like, wait, does everyone actually want to play D&D and they just have no idea what this game is? But like everyone would have fun doing this. Makes complete. And once that kind of clicked into place, that most people just didn't know what it was. And then when you watch TV, you see a bunch of people in Viking helmets and cloaks, and it's like, oh, that's what D&D is. You got to talk in a silly voice. You have to literally learn. The rule is look as dumb as possible, apparently, in D&D is what you need to do. Yeah. And then when they see just people playing and having fun, I think getting the opportunity to go on YouTube and see Critical Role, Matt Mercer run his games, Acquisitions Incorporated, any of these groups where you go online and just see pretty normal people just having a good time, that has changed the ball game in such a dramatic way, because now all of a sudden everyone can see a D&D game, and once you see a D&D game, you start to realize what's fun about it, and that this is something that I argue everybody on some level would enjoy a good role-playing game in their lives.
I like the idea of you guys being like, come on, guys, let's go slay dragon. It's lift weights, Tommy. Lift weights was the code word.
We gotta get huge, guys.
I can't wait to go to the gym and throw the basketballs into the hop.
Sure do love those sports games.
Now, obviously, when it's open-ended, these games, there has to be a ton of improv involved. Mm-hmm. How quickly did you gain kind of that going with the flow? Somebody says something, then I got to react to this, and I'm going to do that.
I mean, I'll definitely say part of it, just from the practical standpoint, is accepting the fact that I run 3 hours of games, and pretty much anything can happen in those last 10 minutes, because if I have 2 weeks to plan it out, that's really all I need. So I've leaned more and more now into letting crazier and crazier things happen in my games, because I feel more and more confident knowing that I can always kind of plan the next step of the story given enough time. Improving on the spot, I won't lie, is still something that, you know, gets me a little worried. I'm always worried I'm going to say the wrong thing and then bring the story either to a screeching halt or bring us down the wrong road. And they're like, oh, so we have to figure out this. And in my head, I'm like, that's not, no, don't, you total red herring. My bad. And like, when I improv now, I really try to listen to what the players are saying, and I try to listen to what they want out of the situation, and then kind of obviously, like every dungeon master, I'm letting the dice kind of tell the story. And if you roll bad, you don't get it. If you roll good, great, excellent, it all works out. But I just had a player in my game literally last night, a totally new player. She only could show up in the last hour of the game, but she showed up and just said, like, yo, that evil undead knight, can I try to bluff him and convince him that, like, I'm in his order of knights? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And in my head, I'm like, That's not where the story is supposed to go, but it could be, right? It could be where the story could go, right? And it's like I'm conferring with myself and sweating a little bit, thinking, I don't think I'm leading us into a dead end. I think this is somewhere it could go, but very much listening to like what they think their coolest idea that they could do is, and then kind of, if it's not the best strategic idea, maybe letting them know that, but otherwise just seeing, can I make this cool idea that they have work? And can it work the way that they want it to? And then when once we've established that, then once we roll the dice and get a horrible roll, it's even funnier when it all goes spectacularly bad. So that I never feel bad about. But it's always, I want to be working with the players and not saying stuff like, well, no, you just can't do that. Like, right. That's where the game stops being as much fun. I want to say yes, but, or yes, and try to work with the improv that way.
Right. Now, I imagine you have some plans for the future of your business and whatnot. Like, I'm thinking, you know, I think of just like I was wondering if you've ever been asked by businesses or quote unquote corporate America to kind of break people out of their shell and play that, you know, like.
I actually have. I do run a couple of corporate games where the companies essentially pay me, and that way the people working in the company feel very comfortable kind of coming and going when it's not them paying for it. And I think personally it's the kind of the best team building you could buy.
Right.
From my thinking, it's some of the best communication based skill building between individuals that you can get. Yeah.
So what else is in the future for you and D&D in general?
Definitely. I mean, I'll say this. This year, I've started to break into some of my client groups that I consider now my favorite client groups. I work with schools. I work with companies. I work with coworkers and then just groups of adult friends. I run like private kids games for birthday parties and stuff. But I'm very excited about running games for families now because I've been increasingly asked to come in and be like, okay, mom, we couldn't get maybe friends together for the kid. So it's going to be this student, maybe their brother or sister, and then mom and dad are going to play too. And the dynamic is so much fun because there's a sudden shift that happens fairly quickly where all of a sudden the dad is like, you know, oh, you should do this. That's a good idea. And they're like applauding their kid. And then their kid goes, oh, cool. I'm going to open this door. That door with the scratching. Yeah, I open that door. And then the dad goes, well, oh, here's the thing. Maybe you shouldn't do that. And I say, yeah, your dad always raised a good point. So what do? Do you open the door or not? And they smile at me and they go, I open the door. And you see the dad's face just go from you're my kid to like, no, you're my teammate, my fellow adventurer who's now going to get us killed. And then I come back next week and it's like, I'm not supposed to open doors without the party's permission anymore. We're supposed to vote on that stuff now. And I'm like, oh, interesting. Was there a discussion while I wasn't here that maybe has informed our strategies going forward? And it is so rewarding when you see kids and their parents becoming teammates alongside each other. It's one of the coolest dynamics I think that exists in gaming because you can do that with a board game. You can do that with anything. But when it's like me, I'm the enemy there controlling all the monsters. And if you kids and your parents can't team up against me, oh boy, I don't know what's going to happen. And they do. They team up and they create hilarious stories. It's just a blast. And I'm very excited about working with them.
Awesome.
I also know that Wizards of the Coast is more and more like bringing in like we got celebrities who are showing up at the conventions and stuff. We have all these games kind of being put online. And I definitely know that my dream is I want to be kind of getting my games online where people can watch them, where people can listen to them, where people can just kind of enjoy them and see what I'm providing. And then at some point be running games with Wizards of the Coast in some capacity, just getting more and more of the word about like exciting adventures and new additions and stuff out there. So, yeah.
Now, I got to ask you, when you're not on the clock, do you do non-D&D stuff? And is it like, that's my job, I'm going to go see a movie?
I definitely do. So it's been tricky because I given the opportunity, will spend all of my time just planning adventures. The kind of behind the scenes work is so rewarding and is some of the most fun stuff to me. When I get in front of the crowd, when in front of the party, that's when I get a little bit of my old like stage fright and social anxiety and stuff. So that's always a little tough to work through. But when it comes to just planning the games, that's a blast. I could and would do that all day if people let me, and I would have and do let myself sometimes. But I know that there's a point where I need to cut myself off. If I don't, I go crazy, and my fear is that I will eventually run and plan so much D&D that I crack, and they find me in my room like, I'm the Goblin King, and they're like, oh no, Tim played too much D&D. So for mental health, I know I need to take breaks. It's something I got to check in with myself on a regular basis, but going to see movies is a big thing, doing movie pass, but I do some gaming stuff for fun. If I do gaming stuff for fun, though, it's generally like with my family or with very, very close friends, or if I run an RPG for aforementioned people, that's like not me on the clock. That's when I'm like, okay, I'll run an RPG, but I'm not running D&D. I'll run anything but D&D. I will run a horror-themed RPG. I'll run a science fiction-themed RPG, but I don't want to do D&D. I do D&D every day all the time now, so it's definitely a little I wouldn't say it's still just as much fun. It's just not maybe as exciting as other RPGs are now that still have that fresh novelty scent on them. So if I can get my family together, we'll run something like Monsters of the Week, which is like D&D, but it's based on like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Supernatural, where you're modern day people hunting down weird monsters and stuff. And I'll run something a little more offbeat. And generally that's still work for me because it's like all the same skills, but I'm also learning like different techniques outside of D&D that I can then bring into my private clientele work.
Awesome.
So it's kind of nice that it does always end up still informing the work that I do and helping me improve.
Tim, I want to thank you for coming on. It's like I said, 10 years ago, I would have completely thought that was impossible, but I mean, you look at what's big nowadays, and everything from Star Wars to Marvel are the biggest things in the entire planet right now.
Absolutely. And I would argue that the two things you mentioned are great because they are campaigns. Game of Thrones, same thing. It's like these long-standing stories that have gone on for years and years, and that's kind of what we love about them. And right, all these adventures that are interconnected. I think it's all D&D.
Yeah. So I have no doubt that you know if you continue the passion for it, you will continue to do this for as long as you want. So I want to thank you for coming on, and I wish you best of luck with all the stuff you got going.
Absolutely, yeah. I appreciate it so much. Thanks for having me on.
Hey Tim, before you go, two quick things. If people want to check you out or book your business, where can they go?
Absolutely. Honestly, if you Google me, that's the easiest way to find out all my stuff and what I'm about. My name is Tim, T-I-M-M, Woods, and you can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. That's my most, like, accessible places. My email is just Tim, T-I-M-M dot Woods at gmail.com. If you want to email me about any requests for games or anything, I do have a website that's going to be hopefully coming out this summer. It's a little overdue and I'm still working on it, but it should be released soon. But otherwise, you can check out my stuff on any of my social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'm available all those. And please just, reach out on any medium you want to.
All right, bro. I feel like I might play Dungeons & Dragons now. I would like to give it a shot.
Never done it before?
I've never done it. Have you?
I don't think... I'm trying to think of all my days. No, I'm not done.
I like how this also sounds like a drug conversation. You done coke before? Nah, I've never done it, but I would do it. But I would try it. Yeah. No, I mean...
I mean, I'm not an LSD guy, but cocaine, yeah, maybe. I could see myself as a cocaine guy.
Yeah,
you know?
I would try it once, maybe socially, if I was around friends and things were okay.
You know, if we were having an 80s party and had on, like, a really nice white suit and I was in the bathroom, I could totally see myself just get out, razor blade, and snorting a couple lines.
Well, you know, next time you come up to Jersey, me, you, Izzy, and Alex, we'll have to play Dungeons & Dragons, maybe hire Tim to come by and guide us through the game.
And then do cocaine with the men's club.
Well, I was assuming we were going to do cocaine before the game, before we even talk about dragons. We went LARPing once without cocaine, and, you know, cocaine would have made it better.
Yeah, I only had aspirins because I was sick as a dog and I was vomiting during the in-between interviews.
Yeah. We did go LARPing, by the way. Go check that episode out. It's ridiculous. So I guess Berlu, did you see Justin Bieber?
Yes. Justin Bieber versus Tom Cruise.
Justin Bieber, Tom Cruise in a fight. Who you got?
Well, let's see. From what I've seen in the tweets, Conor McGregor has said he would promote the show with his thing. So I've got to guess the show's in Ireland.
Right.
So I think the traveling thing might be a factor. I feel that Justin does a lot more traveling being a worldwide musician versus Tom. I don't think they really promote movies crazily in Ireland, if okay. you know what I mean. So right. I'm going to say on jet lag alone, I'm going to give Bieber the advantage there and the age factor.
You got the Biebs. I get the Biebs too. Listen, I know Tom Cruise, that guy don't age, but Biebs is in good shape, man. Let's be honest. Let's call a spade a spade. The Biebs yeah. looks pretty good. And Tom Cruise, listen, I don't know. I mean, maybe those years in Scientology, maybe he could throw a knockout punch, something like that. I don't know, but I got to think the Biebs would win that one. He's like, what, 25 probably?
Yeah, and he's a schmuck, so I can see him cheating.
Yeah.
I just see him and all, like, he wins the fight, and then we find out, like, he put something on his gloves 3 months later, something like that. Something really douchey.
So he hid something in, like, the turnbuckle, like the WWE, like an old...
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Like the referee loses a contact, and all of a sudden there's a chair there, and he just smacks Tom Cruise in the back.
So I was thinking I was gonna make it a whole game, but I'm not gonna because I don't know on the threat of being hacky. But I was thinking of all our guests if they were to challenge each other. Who do you think is the toughest guest we ever interviewed?
The Miller brothers probably yeah. would be.
Yeah, I would say Jim Miller, right? Or Gary Goodridge.
Yeah, but Gary's got a lot of wear on those tires, so Jim is still going out there and everything. So
you think if we had a battle royale, a Verbal Shenanigans battle royale, Jim Miller would come out victorious?
I'm trying to think of. Now, Lenny might just be so insane that punches won't affect him, and he might survive that way.
He'd bring a weapon, for sure.
Yeah. Try and, like, vision all our guests. Right, like, I mean, Randy Santel, he's a pretty big guy. I'm not sure what kind of fighting style he would have. I mean, he would definitely be somebody to look at.
What about Sharon Alexander?
Well, here's the thing. I like pushing her around. Yeah, obviously with that training, that'd be kind of hard. But if it's like a real just knockout Royal Rumble,
right?
I mean, she's not used to taking a punch. I mean,
what about the snake milker who has only a couple fingers and fought his way into learning how to study reptiles?
So you vision him like Jake the Snake Roberts just coming down to the ring with a
right.
just a burlap sack, and everybody's like, oh, God, and just running out of the ring.
Pretty much. He might be a contender. Like, he might be one of those guys who's in the last three of the Royal Rumble. You're like, oh, my God, could the Snake Milker win?
Yeah. I could see him, like, people, like, punching him, and he's just kind of laughing it off somewhat, you know, because all his stories were so amazingly insane. I just feel like it's like, all right, I got an extra one for the next podcast, you
right,
know?
Right. Well, I don't know. It's a weird week for celebrities, man. Big Poppy got shot.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah, that,
if Big Poppy gets shot in the Dominican, there is no hope for any of us.
I mean, the latest rumors I heard, I don't know how confirmed it is, but somebody was saying it had to do like a drug lord, he might have slept with one of his women.
Mm. Well, there is definitely something missing from the story. The story has been reported kind of weird. No one really, like, there's no, like, real concrete anything. Anytime you read everything, every story is kind of different. It's really weird. He's being flown up to Boston. Like, he's not a Red Sox anymore. Like, there's just weird things going on. But still, if Big Poppy... If Big Poppy David Ortiz got shot in Dominican Republic, we are all screwed.
I'll even add a little bit to it. If a drug lord like put something out to get him shot, I get really pissed off with that hitman who couldn't hit something vital on that big ass body. Like, I would literally be like, how on earth did you miss everything? You hit his gallbladder. What is that?
I told you my David Ortiz story, but I'll tell it again real quick. When the Trenton Thunder were the Red Sox affiliate back in the day. Now, I don't remember 100% if they were playing the Twins affiliate or he was on the Red Sox at that point. But me and my friend went to the Trenton Thunder game, and we sat about three rows from first base, which that's not bragging. They're like $15 to sit by first base. So there's this guy, Ortiz, and we're just ripping him apart, razzing him the whole game. Ortiz, you suck, you fat bastard, you suck, you know, over and over the entire game. 2 weeks later, whatever, 2 months later, on the Red Sox, mashing balls, hitting behind Manny Ramirez, and then becomes David Ortiz. So, sure enough,
so
that's my...
Scott Brennan is the reason why we're going to have a DH in the Hall of Fame in a few years.
Yeah, so when they make, if they make, yeah, it's like my Forrest Gump story. Like, yeah, I made David Ortiz a Hall of Famer.
My bad. I didn't know.
No, but it is really crazy. Like Big Poppy, he can't get shot. But I don't know. I guess he's... Hey. I hope he recovers. I like Big Poppy.
I hope so too. Even if you're a Yankees fan, you can't be like, yes, go into critical condition, yes.
Yeah, I bet you there are some out there. But brother, what do you got?
Well, as a little continuation of what we talked about, I kind of said to myself, you know, the weird thing about the Justin Bieber, Tom Cruise thing is nobody really knows what the beef is between one or both of them or just the other. So I figure I have 48 random names on my sheet here.
Okay.
And I got a random number generator. I'm going to just pop in a couple numbers and read off a couple names.
We had like thinking here.
And we're kind of going to figuratively figure out how these two people could have a beef with each other where they would say, let's have an MMA fight.
Okay, so there's going to be two names, and I have to figure out, or we have to figure out. So it's not just
why
me.
Why they would have a beat together.
So it's not me alone on this one. You're in this one.
Yeah, I'll help you out.
All right, good, fine. Good. Sometimes I get lonely. Sometimes you give me games. You put a lot of pressure on me. I think about them at night. I wake up. I have flashbacks. Like, oh, my God, did I say the right answer? Did I guess the right Floridian? She's from Florida. I'll scream in the middle of the night. You know? So
Alex is like, who's from Florida?
You, bitch. Go back to sleep.
On our sleep ovation mattress.
All right.
Anyway, all right. So let's see. My first number here is 16. So Nicole Kidman.
Mm-hmm.
And number 5. And Macaulay Culkin.
Nicole Kidman and Macaulay Culkin. Why would they have a beef? Well, one time, Macaulay Culkin was left infamously home alone.
Mm-hmm.
What movie?
He was.
What movie did he watch?
I don't know, Scott. What did he watch?
One of Nicole Kidman's crappy movies. And he
so
carried.
You're saying,
right.
So you're saying Macaulay Culkin was there and saying, "Thank God I don't have no parents. I have no brothers here. I have the house to myself."
Right.
And then. What was it, Eyes Wide Shut, I think, is one of hers.
Yeah.
So he's watching that, and he's like, I finally have free time to myself.
Correct.
And this movie's dragging on and on.
Correct.
And then his mother just like, Kevin, you're here. It's like, God dang it. All my free time is gone, and Nicole Kidman put on a crappy performance in this movie.
Well, here's more what I'm thinking. Like, okay, The McAllisters were obviously a pretty rich family, but not a smart family, right? Like, you know, they left their son home twice, did all things. So maybe they just happened to forget to pay their satellite bill, right? So all they had was basic cable. And what they had was a Nicole Kidman movie that was terrible. And Macaulay Culkin watched that movie. It was Home Alone. And he watched it. It was this terrible movie. It scared him a little bit. He didn't really like the acting. And he just felt that's when all the dread hit him that his family had left him. And he was just pissed at Nicole Kidman and harbored that hate. And finally, one day, they met in the red carpet. And boom, Macaulay Culkin just unleashed and said, I hate you, Nicole. And she said, why? And there's the beef.
Yeah, I think it was on the red carpet of Richie Rich, the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, naturally. Yeah.
Naturally so.
Right, so there's the beef.
There we go. There we go. All right. Number two.
Can I pick
Reverend Run from Run DMC.
Okay.
Versus Shania Twain.
I'm going to let you take the lead on this one.
Well, I mean, it's pretty obvious. It's Shania's beef with Run DMC.
Really?
When she was a young girl, she had that natural singing voice for a long time. And she knew she could perform with everybody. And you know who she grew up loving?
Run DMC.
Aerosmith.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So she heard the original version to Walk This Way. And she said to herself, that is the most amazing song humanly possible. But check this out. I got a little country twang that can combine the two, bring rock and country together.
Gotcha.
And make this the infrastructure for years to come.
Right. A mashup song that would be played for ages at parties and things like that. Yeah.
So she submits to like the Aerosmith management, and they're like, oh, this is good, but you know, these guys Run DMC just happened to stop by, and you know, we're kind of behind on schedule, so we're going to just combine rock and rap and see what happens. Right. And she knew that it's like oil and water. It don't mix.
Right.
It should have been rock and country. And for years, it's just been tearing her apart. And then one day, as they're on the red carpet for the premiere of Run DMC's own reality show, she just got in Reverend Run's face.
Okay.
And just told him right there.
Right. Wow. I mean, it's amazing that you knew that. It's amazing. You knew that.
I got connections, Scott. What can I tell you?
Berlo, can I pick two numbers? Can I pick two numbers?
Ooh, that sounds like a wonderful plan. Go ahead.
I'm going to go with number 18, my favorite number. And okay. 18 and 60. 18 and 60.
We did 16 already. That's Nicole Kidman.
60. 60.
I got 48 here, so you got to go.
18,
lower.
And we'll go with 30.
30. All right. So 18, you're going to like this.
Okay.
You're a big fan of this person. Dave Grohl.
Oh, yes. My pick for president.
And Christina Aguilera.
Well, this is so obvious. This is so obvious what happened. We all know. We all know exactly what happened. Around.
You know, enlighten our audience, Scott.
Well, we know the truth between this. So, you know, Dave Grohl was going through a hard time. Kurt Cobain had just died. You know, everyone, there was a lot of suspects here. There was something fishy about Kurt's suicide. And, you know, Dave started to look into things. He hired a private investigator. And everyone's pointing fingers at Courtney Love. Oh, it's you, Courtney, you dirtbag, you drunk, you did this, right. Blah, blah, blah. Stop drinking. You probably shot your husband in the head. No one liked her. She was like the Yoko Ono of the grunge era, right?
Oh, okay, yeah, makes sense.
But all along, Dave knew a little better, because Dave always knows a little better, okay? Now, he was investigating something. And he was looking at the crime scene photos. All of a sudden, he noticed a genie's lamp in the right-hand corner.
What?
Yeah, a genie's lamp in the right-hand corner of the photo.
That sounds familiar. Doesn't Christina Aguilera have a song like that?
Now, what's interesting is, so they cleaned up the crime scene, had Kurt's funeral, all that, very disappointed, and they never collected said genie's lamp, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, they went into Dave decided to go into Kurt's house. Miserable. He was shocked. He was upset. But there it was, the genie's lamp. So he rubbed the genie's lamp, rubbed it. All of a sudden, Christina Aguilera pops out.
She My said, God.
She said, "I'm a genie in a bottle."
And just, Kurt didn't rub me the right way.
He's like,
man.
Well, what do you mean? He's like, well, you know, look at the evidence. And sure enough, in the pictures where you thought you saw a blonde-haired woman, mm-hmm. similar height, not Courtney Love.
Oh, man.
Christina Aguilera. And the beef has gone on since that day.
I mean, it's a little shallow of her to hold on, for him to hold on to murder. But, I mean, I guess beef is beef.
Beef is beef. That's what happens. Beef is beef.
Yeah.
So
while you were telling us that crazy story, I got two more numbers. And I got Bobby Bonilla and Robin Quivers.
Well, I mean, that's obvious, Berlo. Why don't you tell them?
All right. Yeah. So, as you know, Bobby Bonilla has been retired from baseball for a while, and he's been looking for a new gig.
He doesn't need to, though.
But you see, he wants to keep his afternoons, you know, keep his mind going, you know, new frontiers, if you will.
Right. Why he's collecting that $2 million a year.
Yeah. And what he said to himself was, after the whole, when Craig Carton got arrested, there was a big opening in New York sports radio.
Oh, so it's recent. So this is recent.
Yeah. So he said to himself, that's the perfect opening for me. I'm going to go to it, and I'm going to send shockwaves throughout the world, because I'm not going to get another sports person as my sidekick.
No. That wouldn't happen.
That'd be silly. No. I know enough about sports, but I don't know enough about radio. So he called up Robin Quivers, and he's like, listen, I can pay you $2 million once a year at this certain date if you will be my co-host.
Right. Right.
But she got pissed off how late in the year the Bobby Bonilla check comes out. So she's like, no, I can't do it. I need a regular paycheck. And he's like, well, you don't understand. I'm going to be paid literally till the end of time. I think that's how my contract is set up.
Essentially. Yeah.
Yes. And she just basically said, nah, I got to be honest, I was more of a Barry Bonds guy.
Wow.
And she hung up on him.
Wow. So there's beef. There's beef. There's beef. Yeah. There's just straight up beef there, for sure. Wow.
Should we do another one, Scott?
Let's do one more. Number 14.
Number 14. All right. Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, okay. And she's going to be battling right next to her number 13.
Tyra Banks.
They just hate each other because they're women. They don't like each other.
Yeah.
All right, next two numbers, Berlo.
All right. You know what? I'm just going to pull over. How about Tom Selleck and Chris Christie?
Well, the Tom Selleck Chris Christie rivalry has been going on for at least decades at this point.
You're saying there's charred beef here. That's how long this beef's been going.
Well, if Chris Christie keeps getting weight, it'll be ground beef.
We're ready for the morning show.
Pow! Kiss. So what happened long ago when Tom Selleck was really in his acting prime, and he grew that really nice mustache that we all know. Mm-hmm. There was an understudy back in the day. There was an understudy, and
really?
He went by the name of Chris. Now, Chris just grew this mustache, but he there was something missing. Like, he just couldn't tighten his body up. He couldn't get it to the point of Tom Selleck, you know?
Oh, good.
So they were understudies for a year. And rumor has it that Chris was a by far better actor. Like, he could act. They said he could act like he cared. They said he could act like he was truthful. They said he could act just like he could act like he knew what was going on. Like, he was an amazing actor. And Tom Selleck
had the full range.
Right. And Selleck, on the other hand, he was more of the looks, you know? Ladies dug that stash. He had a nice body. Mm-hmm. So they just kept going at it and kept going at it and kept going at it. And one day, they had an audition for, I believe the name of the show was Bridges.
Bridges?
Yeah. Bridges or Two Bridges, something like that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right. And Chris was in the lead, by far in the lead. And Tom didn't know what to do, but he was still getting the part. And this really made Christie so mad. And he was like, listen, how am I going to stop Tom Selleck from getting over Bridges? And Christie tried to block them.
Oh, gotcha.
So he blocked Bridges.
Uh-huh. Sir. Something about that statement I should be aware of?
Oh, no. He just blocked Bridges, never did anything wrong. In fact, what's weird is that he blocked the show Bridges, but two of his understudies went to jail, but not him. It was really interesting. Wow. Really weird. Yeah. So that's what I heard. That's why they got beef.
There's bad beef out here. And also, Connor, if you're listening to our podcast, and don't just go for, you know, Tommy and Justin. There are other beeps out there to really fill out your pay-per-view.
I like that you say if Connor's listening to podcasts. You know he is. You know.
I mean, he is retired. He's got plenty of time. Right. So he should be listening to this podcast right now.
Absolutely. As should all of you. Berlew, I think it's time to wrap this thing up, put it in a bow, and send it off into the world. Do you have anything to promote before we get out of here?
Sure. I'm going to promote this place local to us in Billerica. It's a kickboxing fitness martial arts center called Team Octopus.
Team Izzy Octopus? Goes there.
Yeah, they basically train you in different either fitness exercises or teach you kickboxing, martial arts. They actually have an offer right now. If you go onto their page on Facebook, for a limited time offer, they're offering 2 months of free jiu-jitsu training. To get more information on it, go on Facebook and look up Team Octopus Villarica, where you can get details and get 2 months of free Brazilian jiu-jitsu training. I mean, that's a pretty awesome deal.
Now,
that's Team Octopus.
Will you be joining the jiu-jitsu thing? Will you and Izzy be like rumbling in the living room, tapping each other out, petting the dog, like just a normal romantic Saturday night?
We took kickboxing classes there.
Oh, okay, cool. How'd you like the kickboxing?
It definitely works your cardio.
For sure.
It was something I had to really pace myself on getting used to, but it's a really cool class and all. Great trainer and all. The trainer there, he's got a match coming up. I don't know what if it's a professional fight or what, but it's in Atlanta. We're looking to go see him fight later this month. So.
Nice. I hope he doesn't lose, because then you like go to the kickboxing class. You're like, I get what you're telling me, but
yeah. Jab cross jab, really?
Yeah.
Is that what you want to do?
That's what
Remember
you did.
Last time that happened?
Yeah. So I will quickly promote. I'm going to promote two things. for friends of the podcast, I'm going to promote a good friend of ours, Joe Conte, very hilarious comic. He's got, one, he's got the Conte and Kenny show every Monday night. It's actually an old school internet radio show. It's not a podcast. They still broadcast live every Monday. But he is coming out with the Honeymooners podcast. I know Joe very well, and he knows more about the Honeymooners than pretty much any person ever. And he's teaming up with another guy who knows pretty much every single thing ever about the Honeymooners, and going to put something out. And he's very pumped about it. So check out the Honeymooners podcast coming out soon if you like that sort of thing. And I guess I got to promote myself real quick just this week because I happen to have a bunch of dates and I haven't promoted anything in a while. So I'm going to go tomorrow, Tuesday night. I'm at Thatcher McGee's in Fairfield. This might be up today. So Thatcher McGee's in Fairfield. I think I'm closing the show out. It's a good fundraiser. I forget exactly what it's for, but I know Ghost Hog Brewery is going to be there.
It's for the men's club.
Yeah,
they need more money for clams and beer. Please help out, everybody.
Yeah, the men's club needs clams. And then I'm going to be at the Wooden Spoon on Tuesday, which is in Bloomfield. Very fun show, really cool place, good beer selection, so come on out. And then finally, Saturday, I'm going to be at Rhino Comedy in Nyack, New York. So three shows if you guys ever want to come out and say hi, or you want me to sign your mattress. I can do that.
But, so you're promoting people to carry mattresses into the bars for you to sign.
I don't see anything wrong with this.
Nothing at all?
No.
No conflict of space or anything.
Guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the win at your back. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Later. So alive. What's the matter?